You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. If you like tennis betting, William Hill offers the best in-play action you'll find. You can bet on the outrights, sets, games and point by point. To guide you, there are stats, a court map, live action on William Hill TV and dedicated experts looking for the best bets on the ATP and WTA tournaments on in-play radio. Plus, there'll be extended radio coverage of the Grand Slams. To get involved, tweet the studio at Will Hill In Play or email inplayradio@williamhill.co.uk.
Hello everyone, welcome along to the US Open Tennis Podcast here with William Hill. Dave Kellner in the studio with Sky Sports commentator Nick Lester on the line to look ahead to the final slam of the tennis season. First of all, before we get stuck into the betting, a warm welcome to Mr. Nick Lester. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning, Dave. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Looking forward to this. It's one of my favourite slams. You just get a different atmosphere, particularly in the evening sessions at Flushing Meadows, Nick.
Completely different. Yeah, completely different, Dave. And there's been a lot going on in Flushing Meadows as well. I mean, a lot of renovations. As you know, they're building a roof for next year. So finally, they'll be able to get play when it's raining. There's been an overhaul to the facilities as well. New courts, new practice facilities. And, you know, I think I probably said this to you before. I think the Australian Open has led the way in the majors in the last few years, and Wimbledon, to be fair. And I think it's made all the other majors and all the other events pull their socks up a little bit. They've kind of felt they've had to improve, and New York certainly did do that. And you're right, it's a fantastic vibe in New York. It is sport, as we know, in America is very much entertainment, and they go hand in hand. It's a different vibe, but it's a really good one.
Let's start with the men's side of the draw, and Novak Djokovic 6-5 favourite here with William Hill to win the US Open. Andy Murray is 100-30, Roger Federer 4-1, Stanislas Wawrinka 12-1, Kei Nishikori 16s along with Rafael Nadal, and it's 33-1 and bigger the remainder. Novak Djokovic then, Nick, 6-5 favourite, winner of two slams already this season, and following his win at Wimbledon, went to Canada, finished runner-up in the Canadian Masters. Same result in Cincinnati, beaten by Roger Federer in the final there in straight sets. He wants this one, doesn't he? After what happened last year, Djokovic will be obviously ready to go, and the draw looks handy for him as well.
Yeah, no doubt it's a good draw. No doubt I think he'll be delighted with the way the draw's panned out. Certainly from look at sort of the first two or three rounds, it's been kind. I was in Cincinnati last week, and I have to say, he looked very tired. I must say, he looked a little worn out. There did look to be a fair bit of fatigue there. The game wasn't there. He's never won Cincinnati. He's the only Masters 1000 missing from his CV. So perhaps there was a little bit of extra pressure there, but he certainly didn't find his A game last week. Now, how much you read into that is, again, probably open for discussion. He tends to go away in New York and stay fairly far out of the town. He stays in New Jersey, gets himself out of it, and kind of just does his own thing, really, with his family. He has a big place up there. Form-wise, played very well in Canada, I thought. Big win for Murray against him up there, obviously having lost, I think, 9 in a row, snapped that run of 2 years in a row against him. But I think, you know, the bare facts of the matter is that if you look at Djokovic's defeats this year, the bare facts of it are it's taken some performance to beat him. Karlovic beat him at the start of the year. Federer beat him in Dubai. Two matches where you look excusable performances. You know, two guys who serve can take the match out of his hands. Wawrinka at the French, a career best performance. And then obviously Murray just a couple of weeks ago. So he's the man to beat, make no mistake about it. The only question mark I have around him is there any lingering fatigue? Because it has been a long season. He's played a lot of matches. It's a very similar season to what it was in 2011 and when he put together career best numbers. So I think from my point of view, I'm not 100% convinced by Djokovic at this tournament, purely from what I've seen in the last couple of weeks. I do think that there just could be a little bit of tiredness in the legs. Clearly, he has stepped it up here before. He hasn't won the US Open, Dave, since 2011, which is actually quite staggering when you think about it, considering that he has raised the bar for tennis on a hard court, you know, in the last few years. And he's not been able to win this event since 11. So, just a couple of question marks right now.
It's interesting that you reference fatigue as well. Nick, because Andy Murray looked tired last week in Cincinnati. He's 100-30, played more tennis than Novak Djokovic in the lead up to this final slam, having played Davis Cup and then having played a couple of events in the American US hardcourt swing. Is fatigue going to be an issue for Andy Murray this fortnight?
Maybe. I mean, he actually played three American events because he actually played Washington as well this year,
yes,
which was very unusual. Clearly, there was a fairly large financial incentive for him to go to Washington and play, but I think it was surprising he lost to Gavrashvili in the first round, in fact, of Washington. Maybe. I mean, I think the big monkey off the back was in Canada, to be fair, where he was able to beat Djokovic. That was the big win almost of his year, to be honest, despite the fact he beat Nadal on clay in Madrid. I think beating Djokovic on a hard court in Canada was a massive boost for him. And I think in a way, I commentated the match last week against Federer in Cincinnati, and it was a pretty extraordinary week for Federer. I mean, it was one of those kind of weeks. I've been traveling a fair few years on the tour, and I've not seen a single performance from a single player quite as breathtaking as that over the course of five matches, and we'll talk about it in a moment. But to go back to your direct question about Murray and fatigue, I'm not sure. I think physically he is right back at 100% now. I really do. I think so much of the back issue that was troubling him for periods of last year out of the way, I think he now trusts his body 100%. I think his game has improved. Jonas Bjorkman's definitely had an influence on his game. I mean, some of the numbers last week on his second serve return in terms of the position he's taking off the return are day and night from what it was 18 months ago. I mean, this guy is now stepping in off second serve, something that a lot of people wanted him to do for a long time. He's now making it happen. He has the ability to make that happen. He's coming in more. He has such good skills at the net, Murray. There's so many good things about his game. As you know, I'm a big fan of his, always have been. And, you know, this is his favourite major. I think these are conditions that very much suit him. He's got a fairly awkward first-round match, as we know, against Nick Kyrgios, who's been in the headlines himself. Yeah. But he's in a slightly different, more difficult part of the draw. That's one thing I would say.
Yeah, very interesting first round match, isn't it, against Kyrgios? Obviously, one that's going to garner a lot of attention in the lead up to the championship. As far as assuming he gets past Kyrgios, which he should do, you look at other names in his quarter, Nick. He's got Kevin Anderson in there, but Anderson plays to Murray's strengths, doesn't he? So you wouldn't expect the South African to be able to hurt Murray on this surface.
No, I mean, he's just a bit wooden. Anderson's just a bit wooden. Big serve, big forehand, but you've got to have a lot more than that to beat Murray and these top three or four guys. And Anderson's playing well this week in Winston-Salem. He took a wild card there because he needed some matches and he's in the semi-finals. But no, I don't see any problem going forward. Bellucci's in there as well. Dominic Thiem, these are guys for me that Murray's in a different league from. Then you start to look further ahead in the draw and you see one man, Stan Wawrinka, stand out perhaps in the quarterfinals. But again, as we've seen with Stan in the last couple of years and looking at him play the last couple of weeks, the jury's out very much for me on Wawrinka. There's a lot going on off corners, we know, with him. And I know there was at the French Open and obviously he was able to focus on the job in hand there. But I still think on a hard court he's not quite as effective. He does get rushed a little bit. He is liable as well, Dave, to mentally still check out of matches. There's no doubt about that. He's not as consistently tough as the top three or four guys by some distance. So I'm not even sure if Wawrinka's going to make it to the quarterfinals, despite the fact he has a pretty good record in New York. But again, seeing him play last week, He didn't look good last week, Wawrinka. He looked as though there was the stuff going on. So I think if Murray beats Kyrgios, and he should do that, could well go the distance, I think he's a pretty much shoo-in for a semi-final.
Roger Federer, 4-1 in the market. We briefly mentioned his performance in Cincinnati last week. Ultra-aggressive last week in Cincinnati. It was an incredible week for him, beating Andy Murray in the semi-final, then dominating Novak Djokovic in the final. He's timeless, Roger Federer.
Listen, Dave, I've been fortunate enough to be on tour for probably nearly 10 years now, and I have never seen a week of tennis from a single player like that. And just for me, how striking and how different it was, and the attitude that he played and the freedom he played with last week, it was like he was a 19-year-old just coming on tour with no inhibitions. It was incredible last week. And it was just so kind of, you know, I left Cincinnati on Monday. I flew back and as I say, I've just not seen anything like that before. And I'm not saying sitting here saying he's going to go and do it at the US Open, because who knows? The odds are against him. There's no doubt about it that the age is still a concern. But the way he was taking balls on last week, he was taking balls off second serves from a foot behind the service line. I mean, no one's ever seen that before. That was like McEnroe in his heyday. And that was on McEnroe. There was only one guy that could do that before, and that was McEnroe. And it was just, it was breathtaking, to be honest. It was breathtaking. And of course, the big question is, it's all very well doing it in the best of three sets over five matches in Cincinnati, but can you do it over five sets for seven matches in New York? And you know, that's you've got to ask yourself that question when you're putting down some money at this tournament, because is he playing last week? Did he play the best tennis perhaps we've ever seen from him? Well, I think the answer could well be yes to that. I really do. So if you think he can continue that role, then you could well put some money on. But, you know, is he going to be able to be as aggressive as that against these players over longer periods of time in a more intense environment in New York? And, you know, I'm not sure. I think he has to have a good chance. He has to have a legitimate shot. If he can continue to play with that sort of freedom, for my money, he's the best player in the world. Still, it doesn't matter. Whatever Djokovic has done, if he plays like that, he's the best player in the world, full stop. He's the most aggressive player, the most attacking player. And attack beats defense, I'm afraid to say, still in this sport. We just haven't seen enough of it. So the draw for him is not easy. Leonardo Meyer's a tricky first-round opponent. Good serve as well, Meyer. And we looked at the way Federer was returning second serves last week. Meyer's got a good first and second serve, so that will not be easy. Then Cole Schreiber in there, Isner, guys that can make it difficult. Gasquet's playing well. So the draw's not been particularly kind to Federer. So, again, I have to go with age, and I just still think that at 34 years of age, the odds are against.
Speed of the courts as well here. Different type of court here at Flushing Meadows compared to what he was playing on in Cincinnati.
Yeah, a little. I think obviously it's a bigger court as well, which has to be a consideration, because bigger court means that guys can defend better against Federer.
Yes.
Balls are very similar. Kick conditions are probably a little slower, but not a lot. Cincinnati's pretty similar. I mean, all the American conditions are fairly similar. The balls tend to be light. They're kind of pellets. They fly through the air, which helps the more aggressive player. So, yeah, for me, Federer, obviously, with just a tricky draw, is just, for me, just made me slightly hesitant.
Stan Wawrinka is in there at 12-1. Obviously, a lot of controversy surrounding his retirement when playing Nick Kyrgios in the first round at the Canadian Masters, then went to Cincinnati and was wiped off the court by Novak Djokovic in the quarterfinal there. You mentioned your reservations about Stan Wawrinka this week. Just cast your mind back to what happened in Canada. And we've mentioned this on numerous podcasts in the past. Nick Kyrgios had to grow up and grow up quickly. It's not happening, Nick, is it?
No, it's not. And goodness me, if I had a pound for the amount of times I've discussed this over the last couple of weeks, I'd be a rich man. But it's a difficult one. I think there's two, you know, clearly he threw two people under a bus. He threw two people who had no say and no wish to be involved in this under a bus. And that was rough. And Nick needed to learn, as you say. At the same time, Wawrinka's not... Wawrinka's had a few issues himself off court, as we know. He's not exactly been the cleanest living individual. So I think from Wawrinka's point of view, he has a part to blame as well, because he, to an extent, has kind of pushed the blame elsewhere and kind of said, look, oh, it's not me. And yet actually, as I say, he's got a few concerns in his private life that have not been right. So from Kyrgios' point of view, that the ATP have obviously made a statement, and they've given him a suspended ban, 28-day ban, so he's got to be on good behaviour. It's not the first guy to happen to this. You know, Leighton Hewitt, Andre Agassi, these guys, when they were young, we just haven't seen it, Dave. That's the thing. We just haven't seen this sort of individual on tour for a very long time. And I don't know whether, perhaps because in the last few years, we've called for more personality in tennis. You know, the people that only follow the sport maybe on a part-time basis said, oh, there's no personality in the game. I don't know whether that's kind of just made Kyrgios almost have more to hit his side of things. So actually, I need to be more of a personality. I need to completely be me. And actually, stupidly, has overstepped the mark. I do think there's an issue with his family to blame. I don't think he's been given particularly good advice. All I can hope, Dave, is that he learns from this, because there's no doubt about it, this kid is the real deal on a tennis court. His game is electrifying, and he will win tournaments, and he will probably win majors, but he just needs to grow up now.
He does. As for Stan Wawrinka, 12-1, we've mentioned the reservations that you've got with Stan. Kei Nishikori, 16-1, finalist at Flushing Meadows last year, got that win over Novak Djokovic. Maybe not progressed as we expected this season, had a few injury problems as well. There's a question about Kei Nishikori coming into this championship, in my mind anyway, Nick.
Yeah, a little. I mean, I think, to be honest, he's coming in on an upward curve. I mean, he won Washington. I was in Washington 4 weeks ago to see him win there, played great that week, took advantage of Murray's early defeat, then went to Canada, duffed up Nadal comfortably in the quarters before losing out in the semifinals and getting injured again, and pulled out of Cincinnati, which disappointing, because I think people just thought, you know, oh, here we go, big Masters 1000, Nishikori's not here again, and he's pulled out. You've got to remember that a year ago, Dave, Nishikori came into the US Open with barely any matches under his belt in the space of a month coming in, and he wasn't really being talked about, and yet was able to make that run to the final, and to be honest, only ran into a completely inspired performance from Marin Cilic over the course of the 2 weeks. So I actually think Nishikori could be a bit of value here in this draw. I think he's fresh. The injuries he had earlier in the year on the grass court season were a calf problem. That popped out of nowhere, which was a shame. I had a long chat with his coach, Dante Bettini, a few weeks ago. He was very positive about the way Kei was playing.
Decent draw as well.
Yeah, and the conditions do suit. Plays Benoit Paire in the first round. Robredo's the first seed he should face. Dolgopolov's a slight worry for me because he's dangerous, as we know. But again, over the course of five sets, I like Nishikori there. And then Ferrer is in that section as well, who hasn't played since Nottingham before the grass court season, so he's not got any matches under his belt. And then you've got Cilic in there. So I actually think of that bottom half, of that top half, should I say, of that bottom section, Nishikori actually stands out fairly largely for me there. I think his game suited to this surface. He takes the ball incredibly early, as we know. And the injuries are to one side. And that bodes well for, I think, the Japanese player.
Rafael Nadal, the only other player less than 33-1 in the betting here with William Hill. Nadal in there at 16-1. I don't think we're going to... Well, we're not going to see the best of Rafael Nadal this season. And we might never see the best of Rafael Nadal ever again on a tennis court, Nick. And he's in that top quarter. So if he does manage to progress through to the quarterfinal, he'll face Novak Djokovic. And that would be too big a hurdle for Nadal to overcome, surely.
Yeah, I remember saying to you at the Wimbledon, and you asked me if I thought Nadal was done. And I said to you, no, I don't know. I think he's probably got a bit more in him. But I have to say, last week was the first time I've watched Nadal play in Cincinnati and thought, my goodness, he's all at sea. And he was all at sea last week. It really was. He was all over the place. I mean, he didn't know what was going on. He's changing his tactics. He's not trusting his forehand anymore, which is, you know, it was all about serving forehand for Nadal and all about making players play the extra ball under pressure. And yet he looked just a shadow of himself last week on the hard courts of America and the week before when Nishikori completely outplayed him in Canada. So he's a long way away. And I feel for him because, you know, we all know how much he's given to the sport. We all know how much he puts into the game. You speak to anyone in the sport, no one has a bad word to say about Nadal. No one. It's funny, I talked to a lot of umpires over the years, and especially last few weeks, actually, and everybody tells you that Nadal is the most respectful competitor they have. And despite the fact, obviously, he does take his time between points, we know all the quirks he has. It's kind of sad to see. And you're right. You know, despite the fact he's got a good record here, there is a lot to prove right now for Nadal. But if there's one guy that's certainly not willing to lay down and accept it, Dave, it's Nadal. You know, this guy is the Jimmy Connors of his era. Mm-hmm. And I just hope he can find his way back for 2016.
Do you think he'll exit early here, Nick? What's your gut feeling?
Well, I mean, he plays Cioric in round one, which, again, if you look at it and you sort of think, oh, Cioric, yeah, he's a good young player. But I'm not sure Cioric has the game. He beat him in Basel, but I'm not sure Cioric is the sort of guy that's going to beat Nadal. So I think he'll be okay there. Then Fanini is the first seed he faces. Well, Fabio will be lucky to get to the third round, to be honest, because he plays Steve Johnson in the opening round. So I actually can see him getting through the first couple of rounds. And then, again, you look ahead further and you go, well, Raonic is injured and not in good form. He went 0-2 in the two American hardcourts. So Lopez is in there over five sets. Lopez only just beat him over three when Nadal was playing pretty poorly. So actually, you can make a case to say that Nadal could well make the round of 16 here, round of eight possibly, and go on to face Djokovic. Mm. Wouldn't surprise me, because the draw is actually fairly kind in that part there.
As mentioned, 33-1, bar those six we have talked about, Nick. Who do you want to mention from further down the list?
It's tough because, I mean, the one player who I saw last week who I really thought got his mojo back was Dimitrov. He's been in a slump for probably 6 months since losing the Australian Open match to Murray. I think it was in the round of 16, I want to say, in five sets or four sets. He's been all over the place today. Issues, obviously, his relationship with Sharapova was on and off, and I think there were distractions off the court. But last week, he really looked back to something like the Dimitrov of old. Losing to Murray, had a 7-4-1 lead on Murray, couldn't convert, which was massively disappointing, because you did kind of just felt if he could have won that match, it would have propelled him forward. But he looked to be somewhere back towards the old Dimitrov. Now, in saying that, his record against the top 10, top 15 this year is dire. It really is. But I think if he can find his A game on conditions that suit, athletically, he's still, for me, one of the best in the game. Could face Cilic, perhaps, in that third round, if Cilic can find a way through. I'm not sure Cilic will. So I think Dimitrov could be one to watch, certainly in that little section of the draw. Other players, Isner's been playing well again this summer, always plays well in the American hard courts, and he's rested now as well, Isner. He's always come into the US Open a little fried, but he's rested here. And I think he may well make a little run perhaps to that second week.
Grigor Dimitrov is 40-1 and John Isner 125-1, so maybe look for them to win a couple of early matches. Overall assessment then on the men's side, Nick?
Yeah, I think from an outsider point of view, I do like Nishikori's chances here. He was so close last year. I do think he comes in here fresh. He's fit, which is always the big issue. He's improved his game. He's looked good on the American hard courts. If you believe Djokovic is fresh, which is a pretty big ask, then I think Novak's got to still be the man. You know, you can't look away from the fact there's only been three or four guys that have beaten him this year. But it's been a while since he won this one, and he did look to be at times a little forlorn last week. There did look to be some issues with Becker as well. There was a lot of biting towards his team, something perhaps we haven't seen. And Murray obviously has to be in the mix. So, you know, it's as you were, really, Dave. There's still a huge gap for me between these top three or four and the rest of the field. This next generation in the men's side of things have not stepped up, but could this be the year that maybe they do? And this Nishikori, 24, 23 years of age, for me, could be worth certainly a bit of each-way value.
Good stuff. Nishikori 16-1 in the betting. Novak Djokovic does head the market at 6-5. On to the women's, and Serena Williams is the 10-11 favourite to win the women's US Open. Victoria Azarenka 8-1. Maria Sharapova is 10s. Simona Halep 10-1. Belinda Bencic 20-1. Madison Keys and Petra Kvitova, both 25s, and it's 33s bar. Serena Williams, Nick, bidding for the season Grand Slam, 10-11 favourite. Only three women in the modern day era have achieved this slam that she's chasing. Steffi Graf, the last of them, she's firmly in there as in the pantheon of the greats of all time, Nick, but she can cement it this fortnight.
Yeah, and it's been an interesting run-in because she, in many ways, has kind of gone into lockdown. It's been funny. There've been last couple of weeks, there've been practices behind closed doors. She's been keeping things very close in terms of not really been doing a whole lot of media. A lot of rumours about perhaps just the complete focus. She's completely in the zone for what's to come over the next few weeks. She's talked so much about how, you know, like every player would do when they come into this tournament, how it's not about the Grand Slam. It's about being able to train her mind to focus on just winning one match at a time and then letting the big picture take care of itself. She lost to Belinda Bencic in Canada. Remember, hasn't had too many defeats this year. I think it's just two or three, isn't it? One to Kvitova in Madrid. And I think Bencic certainly the only player to beat her on a hard court this year. That was a surprising result. Bencic having a career best week that week. And then last week bounced back nicely, played some good tennis to beat Simona Halep in Cincinnati. So you know, well, there's not a lot more to say about this woman, is there? She, you know, she's been able to physically, I think, take the game to a different level. The best serve the women's game has ever seen of any generation, full stop, which has always been able to bail her out of trouble when she's been in problems. And I think in Mouratoglou, no matter what you say about him, and he's a guy who certainly likes the publicity, they have found a fantastic relationship. They have a massive trust in one another. He has improved her game, make no mistake about it. You know, she's not just a player who bullies opponents. She's able to use the court. She opens the angle so beautifully. She can defend well. She can move in now better. You know, she's built on her game, and I think that's full credit to her. And as you say, she's certainly the woman to beat here again. Plays obviously well in New York, has won this event 6 times before, I think it is. The draw has not been particularly kind. I must say, you know, the possibility of facing someone like Sloane Stephens in the third round is awkward. As an awkward prospect, Madison Keys in there as well. So, yeah, I mean, at 10 to 11, you know, she's by far and away the best player in the world. But at that sort of price, still, I'm not entirely sure.
No, and Belinda Bencic in that quarter as well, which is interesting. Nick, at 10 to 11, you mentioned it could be maybe a little bit short, and it's about getting through the first few rounds for Serena Williams, isn't it? Because that's where she, if she's going to come unstuck, it will be early on in this championship, I think, anyway.
Yeah, no, you're right, and that's the history will tell us that over the majors, that if she's got through week one, week two's been fairly okay, apart from the odd blip here and there. But, I mean, as I say, week one's not easy. I mean, you know, potentially Sloane Stephens, I think she'll come through to face Serena in the third round. If there's one player that can match Serena Williams physically in terms of the court coverage, it is Sloane Stephens. So I think, you know, she can, and you've got to remember that Stephens has just won her first WTA Tour title in Washington 4 weeks ago, so that's a big relief for her. She's matured a lot, has Sloane. We talked about her, I think, at the French Open as someone that may well make start to improve, and that's happened, which is good news. And she's been underachieving. Let's not mince our words about it. Sloane Stephens has been underachieving for a while. So that's a tough third rounder, and I think that'll happen. And again, perhaps if you were betting on that and you've seen Sloane play well, maybe look for Sloane to get a set there of some value, because she could well do that. Other parts of the draw, Radvanska, well, we've heard that story before with Agnieszka, haven't we? Just doesn't have the firepower, sadly, to be able to hurt these really aggressive players. Bencic is in there. Again, still waiting for a major breakthrough from Bencic, aren't we? Yes, she's been able to do it in Toronto a few weeks ago, and clearly she's improving, not far off the world's top 10, but still needs to do it in a major. I think that Sloane match could well be the hump match, Dave.
It's difficult to compare and contrast players from different eras, but if Serena Williams does manage to take this championship and completes the season slam, as it were, where does she rank in the list of all-time greats?
Well, I clearly, like anything in life, I mean, sport evolves, right? It gets better. You know, the Williams sisters took this game physically, as I say, to a different level. They changed the face of the sport. I think there's only one player for me. I mean, I've only been watching the game. I'm 38, so I've been watching the game 20-odd years, 25 years. So I think, from my perspective, Steffi Graf was probably the only player who could really match up. And I think, you know, I think from what I'm saying, they played once in their careers, Serena and Graf, way back in the early days. But it would have been fascinating to see them go head-to-head, wouldn't it, perhaps, with both in their prime, because Graf was also an incredible athlete. I mean, she did, I think Graf ran 400 meters at Olympic times, German Olympic times. So she was an incredible athlete, was Graf. Always had that sort of odd slice back end, didn't she? Never had the bit of confidence to roll or hit topspin on the backhand side. And, you know, I think probably that for me is the only player. Navratilova, I suspect, could well have an argument, but a different sort of game. And I think, again, with all due respect to Martina, the game's changed since Martina was playing, you know, and maybe that's because of equipment. That's probably, there is a big factor of that. You know, strings, bigger racket heads have made the game easier. There's no doubt about that. But I think probably Steffi would be, for me, certainly of this generation, the two that come close by.
Just checking this, Nick, and they played a couple of times back in 99. Graf beat her in Sydney in 3 sets, and Serena Williams beat Graf in 3 sets in Indian Wells, so 1 apiece, and that's probably the fair way to look at it as well. William Hill kind of scratching around for a second favourite here, Nick, and gone with Victoria Azarenka 8-1 in the market. There's doubts about Azarenka, beaten by Irani in Canada in the round of 16, and then retired when facing Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova in Cincinnati. Is everything okay with Azarenka at the moment?
I don't know. I mean, it's interesting that she's the second favourite, because I think, for me, I think Simona Halep's the second favourite. No, I really do. And I talked to a lot of people last week in Cincy about her game. She's making a lot of changes to her game, Halep. She's looking to become more aggressive off the serve, her court position. She's taking the ball on the rise a lot more. So I actually think, for me, about the second favourite, for me, it would be Halep. But the interesting thing is, they play each other potentially in the quarterfinals, Azarenka and Halep, if they both get through. So to go back to your direct question about Azarenka, well, you know, obviously, again, if it's horses for courses, she loves playing in New York. She's got a great game for New York. She's made the final, obviously won this event. She has the game to punch holes in players. I think that'd be a fascinating matchup, actually, if she plays Halep in the quarters, because Halep is probably, as we've said before, the most cerebral player out there. You know, she thinks her way around a tennis court like few other players can. Azarenka will bash the life out of you. So I think if those two do play, I think it'll be good. If it were me, and I were betting on this market, I think Halep to come through that bottom half is a pretty good bet, despite the fact, actually, she's not played that well in New York. Third round last year, and in fact, never made the quarterfinals. But if you look at Halep's year as a whole, Dave, she's won 28 matches on a hard court, which is more than any other player on tour, specifically on hard court. So Darren Cahill's working with her now one-on-one. Great coach, great mind, very relaxed figure, just what Halep needs. So I think Halep's coming in here with good form, made the final last week, and I think she's going in the right direction.
Yeah, she's 10-1, Simona Halep. So Victoria Azarenka in there at eights, Halep in there at tens, and Maria Sharapova also 10-1. Her shoulders will have slumped when she saw the draw come out, and she's in the same side as Serena.
Yeah, I mean, and she's not played at all. I mean, she's not played since Wimbledon due to injury, so she's been off the tour. I think I'm right in saying she hasn't played a hard court match, I was reading yesterday, since Miami. Yeah, in fact, that's right, not played a hard court match since Miami. So she's really been struggling this year. And in fact, the last player to beat her on a hard court was who she plays in the opening round here. So Daria Gavrilova, who is a very exciting young prospect. So again, just a little heads up there, if you're having a little bet and you fancy an outside shock in the first round, look for Gavrilova, because she has come on leaps and bounds this year. And I don't know what the price of that first round match is, but again, I'd certainly be taking a close look at that. And Sharapova has not had a lot of matches, and she's not a player, Sharapova, who's always come into majors without any matches playing that well. So I think, you know, there's certainly, she looks exposed to me right now, to Sharapova. I think there is still injury concerns, as you say, and the draw's not being kind. Again, we know the head-to-head with Serena's not good. So massive question mark for me around Sharapova. And again, looking at her form in New York, I think just one semi-final at the US Open since 2006. So not a whole lot of positives for me in the Russians' camp.
Daria Gavrilova, 3-1 to win that first round match against Maria Sharapova. And for the match to go three sets, that's 19-10. So just under 2-1. For a three-setter there.
No, I mean, for sure. I mean, Gavrilova's come on. Yeah, she's come on a ton, played well earlier in the year in Eastbourne, I think it was. And just a good young prospect. Obviously, you know, when you're betting in these markets, you've still got to look at the fact it's a major.
Yeah.
And the pressure and the intensity and everything that goes in that is magnified significantly in these events. But I think, as we always say, Dave, Sharapova's not played a match since Wimbledon. That's 7 weeks ago. And that's definitely a consideration.
Belinda Bencic, 20-1. Just reading into what you were saying earlier about Bencic, do you still think, before you put any cash on Bencic, you want to see her do it in one of these major championships?
Yes, I mean, I think I do. I mean, obviously she did 12, her highest ranking, I think, ever at a major championship. Outstanding junior career. Another one of these players who travels with Dad. Dad is very much front and centre of things. Unique game, very unique game, has fairly kind of big swings off both sides. Great serve really is very, very effective. And I think she likes playing on quicker courts. And that's why I think this particular surface suits her. She actually hits the ball quite flat as well and quite late, which on a hard court works quite nicely if you can time it well. And she has very good timing because she's able to use pace. So certainly, you know, a lot of played great in Canada. I mean, you know, you look at, I was just looking through some of the stats this morning at the top 10 versus the top 10 in 2015. Bencic is 5-0 against the top 10 in 2015. I mean, that is staggering to think that she's not lost her top 10 player this year. So, again, a lot of positives for her. She plays Kara Tanchiva in the first round. Shouldn't have too much trouble there. Can't really see any problems for her, to be honest. Venus Williams in the third round. Again, Venus at the moment these days for me, two up and down. So Bencic could face Pliskova. Again, Karolina Pliskova, who's had a great year, but again, is playing a lot of tennis, Pliskova, and I think she might just be a little burnt out. So Bencic, for me, I think is a quarterfinalist there. I think she's playing well enough, certainly, to make those quarterfinals. And then if we're looking at Serena, perhaps that matchup, well, she beat her a couple of weeks ago. So, you know, for me, I wouldn't be backing her because she hasn't done it a major yet, but that's not to say that this won't be her time. Certainly, if you're looking at the outsiders, the lively outsiders, she is one of the informed players on the tour. She's young, she's confident, and as I say, there are a lot of things to like about her game.
And two players at 25-1, Madison Keys, who we've mentioned already, and Petra Kvitova, 25-1 as well, Nick.
Yeah, I was commentating last night, actually, and I did Kvitova's match in New Haven, and again, it was just a little in and out. You know, we talk about good Petra and bad Petra. There was a lot of bad Petra last night in New Haven, and I never played well in New York, Kvitova. You know, she's from a very small town in the Czech Republic, and I just wonder sometimes whether she kind of struggles to adapt to the craziness of what goes on in New York, and I think she's submitted that in the past, that she has found it a little bit tough to perhaps get used to the conditions and the atmosphere and everything else that goes on there. So, you know, Kvitova, again, not played well. I think she was 0-2 coming into New Haven, lost first round of Canada and Cincy. So the form's been out. She's suffering with a little bit of mono right now, which in many ways I was kind of surprised that she's still playing because there are still physical issues. But in saying that, she did actually look to be quite fresh last night. So,
yeah,
you know, keep an eye on how she plays in New Haven. If she's able to win the title in New Haven, again, that's going to give her a boost. And Madison Keys, to go back to your point, has she kicked on this year? I'm not sure. You know, I think, again, there's a couple of young players who we could probably say about that. You know, I think Caroline Garcia is another one who hasn't necessarily kicked on this year. Keys, great serve. But again, that second year on tour, players find you out a little bit. You know, when you make the breakthrough year, players begin to know your game and they know your weaknesses. And I think Madison Keys could face Radvanska in the third round and then Serena possibly going forward. So, yeah, I wouldn't be on Keys, to be honest.
We've been through the leading contenders, Nick. Any others worthy of mention before we wrap?
Yeah, Elena Svitolina, 17 seed, in great form, made the semi-finals last week.
125-1 she is.
Yeah, British coach, work hard, great attitude. I mean, possibly the most single-minded, one of the most single-minded women on the tour, incredibly tough, outstanding junior. So look for her. Perhaps she could face Makarova early on. Game's not huge, which would be a slight concern for me. And the forehand can break down, but possibly. Anna Ivanovic, again, back with Nigel Sears, new coach again. Nigel Sears, who coached with her 4 or 5 years ago, they're back together again. She chops and changes coaches like the weather, she does. But She, again, if Nigel can plug into what she does well, could be one to look. But I think from the women's draw, Dave, I think, you know, if you're betting, you've got to look at that bottom half. It's a weaker bottom half. There's a lot of players that are not in form there. I go to Muguruza, who's struggled since Wimbledon. I go to, you know, Kvitova. I quite like Anna Karolina Shmibova as well. I really do. She came through college last week. Young player coming through the ranks, seeded 32. Good game, good attitude. And again, I think if you're looking for some early upsets, look for Shmibova to play well at the US Open.
Good stuff. Thank you, Nick. I'm just looking for a price on... I think she's bigger than 200-1. So yeah. Others on Request section.
Yeah, again, not done a whole lot of majors, but again, going in the right direction. Her career is going the right way. Big ball striker, big girl, a little bit like, not Davenport-esque, but... You know, in those kind of those taller players generation, she's a good young player, Shmibova, and you know, confidence is key. And she's played very well in Cincinnati, qualifying there, making a good run through to the last eight. I like Schmiedo's game a lot, actually. And I think, you know, again, from a betting point of view, if you're looking for some early upsets, just watch your banana. Mm.
Overall assessment then on the women's side, Nick?
I'm going with Serena. I think she is, as we've said numerous times, she's a woman who wants to write herself in the history books. And she has done over the years. And this is, New York is her city. You know, it's in line with her personality. And I think the fact that she's older now, in the mid-30s, getting to her mid-30s, means that this is the one. This is almost, if you like, is the icing on the cake of her career, to be able to complete this set of majors, the Grand Slam, the holy grail of our sport. And I think if she can get by Stevens in the third round, she'll get better, and I think she'll win.
10-11, Serena Williams the pick in the women's side. If you're looking for a double, Serena Williams and Kai Nishikori are the two that maybe you'd be keen on here. 31.45-1, that double. Kai Nishikori in the men's side and Serena Williams at 10-11 in the women's side. Nick, as always, an absolute pleasure speaking to you this morning, and I look forward to catching up as the championship progresses.
Pleasure, Dave.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.